Hello and welcome to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Circle Podiatry.
And my name is Jonathan Brocklehurst. It's our aim to raise your awareness of just how important your feet are, to give you the solutions to your foot and leg problems, and to teach you how to prevent future issues.
So grab a cuppa, relax, sit back and put your feet up and enjoy learning about the one part of your body that often gets forgotten. That's right, it's your feet.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we will be exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, the decisions we make, and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. And that is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you are interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations. That was a lovely piece of music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And now we're about to go into our interview with our very special guest today. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. And to be in touch with us, please do go and visit the UK Health Radio website, where you can find all content here from the Foot Health Show. So without any further ado, here's our interview with our very special guest.
So I'm joined today by Leah Asante, who is a lecturer at Huddersfield University in podiatry. Welcome, Leah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jonathan, and thank you very much for having me.
Fantastic. And today is all about looking at the subject, the topic of diversity in the podiatry profession. And before we get into that, I just really wanted to get a little bit more about your journey into podiatry, how it came about, and where your passion is really driven.
Okay, so my journey into podiatry is so unconventional, and everybody always laughs when I tell them about it. So basically, I went to a really good high school, and within that high school, everyone goes to university, like 99% of you go to university. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. Everyone thought I would go into the medical field, as in when I was growing up, a doctor, and then my mother was like, no, I think you're going to be a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. And the subjects I actually studied were human biology, English, math, and computer studies, because I actually thought I was going to be a computer programmer. Then I realized I just really liked my teacher, and I was not going to be I wasn't going to do anything within the computing world. So the summer came, and my mum was like, Leah, what are you going to do with your life if you do not apply? Because I didn't apply for uni. Everyone else had applied. Everyone was going where they were going. And my mum was coming back, and every day she'd come back from work. What about this? What about this? What about this? And I was like, nope. And then she said, what about podiatry? And I said, what is podiatry? And she said, well, she told me what it was. And then she said, because then you could go into the surgery side of it. And I was like, right, okay. And she also spoke about the sporting aspect within that as well. So I thought, okay, I'll apply for that. So I applied for that. And actually, my mum actually organised it all. So pathetic. Actually, so pathetic. She sorted it all out. I went for an interview at Salford, and I got a place. I mean, I don't even think I prepared for that interview. I'm not sure. Well, no, I know I didn't, because when I do interviews now, some of the students aren't prepared, and I just think you're absolutely not getting on this course, because it's just a thing for you. I think that was me back then, but somehow I must have sold myself in some way, shape, or form, because I got on. And I also thought it'd be an easy subject as well, and it absolutely was not.
Yeah.
So from there, I really liked MSK. I actually thought I'd go into high risk, but I did like MSK because there was a tutor there who helped me. And so I had quite a bit of knowledge, a really good foundation. So I went back home in the summer, went to America to work in camps, came back, and I joined the agency. And at that time, it was, what was the agency called again? Oh, I cannot remember. But there was this lady who really liked me for whatever reason. And she used to get me good jobs. So I actually signed up so that I could have money for Christmas. So I moved to Kent. I moved to Kent for a week, and I really enjoyed it, just locuming. And then I moved to London properly. And I started to work all over London, which I loved. And my idea, but I decided that I was going to locum for 6 months, because when I came to getting a proper job, then they would look at my CV and think, well, do you know what? She's come from Scotland. She's got something about her because she's moved around London, and there's been no fear in doing that. Yeah. And that was kind of my thinking behind that. Anyway, during that time, I was working for a place called Riverside, which covered Hammersmith, Westminster, Ealing, also like all over that west side. And I asked the agency if an opening came up, could I get a long-term contract at wherever it was within Riverside? And I, in my head, I'm thinking Hammersmith or Westminster, because I used to work in Ealing, and I found it so disorganized at that time, and I was like, oh, I don't want to come here. Anyway, I got a 3-month contract with Ealing, and at the time I wanted to cry, But then, do you know what? That was my road through my podiatry life. So from there, they got to know me. It was such a diverse team, and I learned so much. Then a job came up in the summer, but I was going to America again to work in camps because I'd been doing it for the past 3 years. And the manager said to me, "There's a job. Why did you not apply for it? Because it's closed now." And I just said, "Because I was going to America and I didn't expect anyone to hold a job open for me for that long because I was going to be away for about 8 weeks." So she said, No, that's fine. We can interview you and then take it from there." So anyway, I got the job. Within a year, one of the girls fell pregnant and they asked me if I would cover. Now, she was one of the biomechanics leads at the time. And she used to cover the hospital, Ealing Hospital, rheumatology clinic, orthopedic clinic, and some of the community clinics. But they all knew that I really liked biomechanics at the time because they'd asked me when I was a locum because I was almost part of the furniture, if you like. So when that came up, I just said to them, I hadn't even been qualified for a year. And they said to me, "Well, it's sink or swim. So take the opportunity because it might not ever come again, or you don't have to take it at all." So I said I would take it. And they said, "Okay, shadow the lady for X amount of time, and then it's all you." So I literally shadowed her. I think I shadowed her for two sessions, and I literally just had to get on with it. And I really, really loved it. I did it for a year, and when the lady was going to come back, I just went to my manager and I said, "I genuinely can't go back to what I used to do because I wanted to do more in terms of I loved biomechanics." So yeah, at that time, I also went back to uni to do my post grad in sports biomechanics. It was supposed to be a 2 year course at Manchester Met. Yeah, Manchester Met. But at that time, it was very much physio focused, and it was almost like they just put a module on for podiatrists where we got a big, massive folder with all these photocopies. And I didn't enjoy it. So the final year would have been a dissertation, but it just, I think most of the podiatrists dropped out. I think there was five of us and then about 30 physios. So from there, I just started to do a lot of, I was covering MSK a lot. Well, by then I was now, a job had been created, which I got, and that was something like connective tissue disorders and MSK or something like that. But whatever it was working in the hospital, covering the rheumatology, the same rheumatology orthopedics, but then also doing other things in the community alongside that. Then in about 2007, there was a lot of money within the NHS. So this was just before the financial downturn. There was money given in the NHS, which meant that I could start an external scope practitioner. Oh no, that was my role, external scope practitioner, podiatrist. And so I was able to start a clinic within the hospital working alongside the specialist physios. So that was
Fantastic.
the back specialist, the knee specialist, and the neuro specialist, all in physio, and they were incredible. That was three, it ran from 2007 to 2010. It was one of the best experiences of my life. I learned so much because up until then, I didn't really have so much respect for physios because I'd seen how some of them had worked, and I was just like, yeah, no, you're just not for me at all. But when I worked with them, they were incredible, and they thought us as podiatrists were like demigods, and I just thought they were super amazing. And it kind of gave me more of an understanding in that, do you know what, everyone has perceptions, and if we sell ourselves as podiatrists, because at that point again, people didn't really know enough about podiatry. I mean, they still don't today, but working with the physios who have more respect, let's be honest, because everyone knows what a physio does. So for them to come to me and ask me questions about their patients, because we were working side by side, that was just amazing. And it taught me at that point, I learned that the way you sell yourself carries so much within the profession. So from there, I was sitting at the table with directors and the falls team. And on the falls team, there's so many directors, and they were asking me all these questions. And I was like, oh my goodness. I was like a child in a sweet shop because I had no idea what was going on. But it was the exposure that I got. From there, I continued doing MSK. Different doors opened here and there. I was growing, I was learning, I was understanding. But I think a lot of my thinking, because on the side, I do coaching, football coaching and everything. I played football. So my mind is always thinking in different ways. Yeah. And when I decided to move into management, so now I went to study for a master's in management. Everybody just said to me that was your natural process. And I was like, no, I don't think it was. And they're like, well, yes, it was, because you're always, basically they were saying the way that I lead is not your obvious, I'm not an obvious leader, but someone said to me, you're like, what is it that rises to the top? Foam that rises to the top or something like that. In the way that I go about things. So anyway, long story short, I moved into management, which I really, really enjoyed. But what I noticed in management within the healthcare was that a lot of people forgot where they came from. So it was that thing, you've moved into management and you start treating people differently as if they are subhuman. And I didn't like that. And I sat in meetings where people were making decisions as if they've never been on the shop floor. And I was like, is this, because you know when you're around the same people for so long, you can end up becoming like them. And I just thought to myself, this is not where I want to be, because while you can stay and try and make a difference, that difference is going to be minimal and it's going to be slow, because things became about money, staff became objects, and everything was about finances. And I didn't like that. It goes against everything that I believe in. So while I did my best in management and I loved it, it was amazing. I like that fast working pace. There came a point in my life where it was, what are you going to do with your life? Because you wanted to be in management, you've now achieved that, but now it's not where you want to be. So someone sent me an email about teaching in the University of Huddersfield. And I just thought to myself, absolutely not. I am not about teaching. But then it was almost like I stopped short and I took time out just to think about it, to consider my life and everything that, like, well, where I wanted to be, what I wanted to do. Yeah. And within my thinking, I realized that every road I take has led to teaching. So whether it's in the coaching world, whether it's in different aspects of my life, everything was about teaching, but I hadn't actually realized that. So then I applied for the job, and I was told that if someone applies with a PhD, I won't get, if six people apply with PhDs, I won't get shortlisted. So I had to make my application form the best I could. So I filled it in to the best of my ability. I sold myself in the best way that I could, and I got shortlisted, which was amazing. So all I knew now was I now need to go and smash this interview. So I went for the interview. The interview, it was probably the best interview I've ever been in. Bearing in mind, I spent my whole life in the NHS, and I've had about, three interviews, one for the MSK, one for the initial job, one for the MSK, and then moving into management. So I spent my entire career in Ealing, pretty much. So going for that interview was the most nerve-wracking experience of my life, but at the same time the most enjoyable, because I knew even if I didn't get this job, that was the road I was going to be taking in academia. That leads me to today. I've been in academia since February 2020. And it is one of the best decisions I've ever made. I love my job, and I loved it in the NHS. Don't get me wrong. I loved being a clinician. I loved making a difference in people's lives, and I loved helping people. when I moved into management, it was about how can I improve the workforce that we have? Yeah. How can we improve it for the patients? And now moving into academia, it's how can I improve this generation to be the best that they can be, to know who they're supposed to be and to walk within that? Because there's more to podiatry than what a lot of people think in terms of just nails, cutting nails, cows and corns. And yes, there's nothing wrong with doing that, but you're going to university and it's always going to be part of our profession. Like whether we go into MSK or whatever, you're still going to need all of that, especially if you do private work. So it's now, this is what you've come to do. These are the different areas that you can go into, but more so, how can we develop you to become the best version of you? Because I believe that's what university is supposed to be. It's not about us standing there going through lectures. It's us getting to know our students to get the best out of them.
Yes.
And I think that is missed a lot, but it will never be missed by me because these people have been put under my care, if you like.
Absolutely.
And I feel that get the best out of them and take my experience and use that. I go back to my experience in the NHS every single day when I'm teaching because I want them to understand that this little bubble that you're in is not real life. Yes. Real life happens when you step foot outside, and the patients that you see today are not the patients of tomorrow, because this world is a diverse world, and because of the whole socioeconomic factors and because of the way the world is changing, you're going to see different people. And even if they are the local people, because of the socioeconomic factors, you're now going to see different issues and the comorbidities and the drug abuse and the alcohol abuse, which has effects within the body, within the skin, within the presenting conditions. So it's trying to frame that in a different way, because that is what I was never taught. So, yeah, that's pretty much my journey.
That's an amazing journey. And I have to say, really nicely linked at the end as well about diversity, because it does really highlight the importance of diversity in the profession. And indeed, I think across all professions, but specifically about podiatry today, is just to really to get your thoughts on what is diversity to you and how does it positively impact the podiatry profession?
Okay, I'll take it back to my time in London. When I first went to Ealing, I realized that it was such a diverse group of people. So we had people from the Asian continent of Asia, continent of Africa, Europe, so and that's Eastern Europe, and then obviously, well, Britain is Europe. So it was a mixed bag of people. And from there, and I think, no, do you know what? I'll give you a story, because this just basically highlights everything for me. So when I joined Ealing, I was working in the emergency clinic in Southall. And I had a patient, and this went on for over a year. I had a patient who came in every time I treated him for his ulcers. He'd come in and he wouldn't have the dressings on. So if I saw him twice a week, he would never have the dressings on, even or once a week. And I'd ask him, where are the dressings? Why have you taken them off? He always said to me, because I went to the temple. Now that meant nothing to me. And it wasn't till about, so I used to work there with a white lady. She was English. It wasn't until about 3 years later, or maybe 2.5 years later or so, that he came back. Now, I wasn't seeing him for 3 years or anything for that length of time, but it was continuously until he healed, then he'd come back. And I was working in the clinic with one of the ladies who's Indian, and she taught me a lot. She's amazing. She said he was in the clinic that day, and he said the same thing to me. And I was just like, see, you always tell me this, but like that means nothing to me. Just keep them on. And she said, no, Leah, what he's saying to you is he goes to the temple. He goes to the temple. So he goes there 5 times a day. He's praying, which means he has to wash his feet. And I was like, oh my goodness, I would never have known that had you not told me. Because obviously his English wasn't great. And my point was, we were never taught any of this at university. We were just taught it from one perspective, and that is from the white man's perspective. So when you now when you see people from different cultures, different backgrounds, you don't understand their lifestyle. So I didn't know that people go to temple 5 times a day, or people do this or people do that. That was all new to me. And it took that long for me to actually, my eyes to be open. So my point is, I was not giving him the best treatment of care possible. That's what we're supposed to be doing. But if we don't learn it, how can we do it? If you do not have a diverse team, how can you learn? Because they were my go-to, and people from the Asian community or people from the West Indies or Eastern Europe, they were my go-to people. If I had an Eastern European patient and I needed help with something, I knew I could call one of my colleagues. If I had someone from the continent of Asia, I knew I had quite a few colleagues that I could contact. They taught me and the patients taught me. If you don't have that, where do you learn from? Because you're not learning very much from the universities. And if you go online, you're not actually going to find very much information on it either, unless you know exactly what it is you're looking for. So in that respect, are we actually giving the best treatment of care possible? That's why so for me, diversity is having a mixed group of people to get the best out of every single situation. It can't be one dimensional. It doesn't work.
I completely agree with that. And I think from my experience as a lecturer as well, I think I'm fully aligned with you on this, is that, you know, gaining that experience in the NHS really does inform so much about how we see life as well, and how we see people, and who those people are, and their stories, their backgrounds, and also the influences on the way they see their feet. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. As you said, you know, for one person, it could seem, you know, inevitable that they may have a certain type of footwear, but for another, it could be, like you say, a religious practice that could be practiced every day, and obviously that. And I was actually on a previous interview speaking about a clinician in Qatar about how actually for some they actually will walk barefoot, and I said, well, why is that? And they said, well, sometimes they will actually enter the house with bare feet as a religious practice of respect. Oh. And you suddenly think, well, in the heat of summer, would that potentially cause, be a heightened likelihood for ulceration? But actually, that may not be seen that way in that culture. And actually, the religious practice may be seen as more important to that person than anything else. And I think that is one of the factors that, of course, you know, being able to sometimes compromise with the patient on those areas, but be able to still provide that education to the patient on their feet, it must be vital. And I think that was actually leading us on quite nicely onto a question about, you know, how can us as clinicians actually address diversity in our place of work? Now, for example, I know you mentioned about there may be teams that may not be so diverse within them, and they may see things more, like you say, more one-dimensional in accordance with maybe their education, a university being more geared towards a certain type of patient or a certain type of clinic. What would be your advice from your experience in lecturing that you would be giving to your students the future of podiatry, in effect?
Well, one of the things that I really push is communication and engagement, because I would not be the clinician I am had I not asked questions. I've never been afraid to ask the patient questions, even if it means my patient is telling me how I'm supposed to dress their foot, because they've been coming for years. So they know, the patient knows more about themselves than we actually do. And some of them know how to, because they've been coming for so long, they know how dressings are to be put in place if you're just covering one off. And it's not being so proud that you can't take that instruction. Yeah. Or not being afraid to ask the questions. I learn a lot about the world in general from my patients. And people always say, you know so much about the world and about people. It's not because I've gone studying it, it's because I've asked the questions. I've never been afraid. And if you don't ask the questions, as I say to my patients, if you don't ask the questions, you can't get to know your patients. If you don't know your patients, you cannot possibly treat them in an effective way, because you need to get to know, do they go and pray? Are they runners? What are they doing in their lives for to help manage their like when you're treating them, how can you have the best management plan unless you know what their life is about? Because if you just give them a management plan from your perspective, then most of the time they're not going to follow it at all. So I think get to know your patients, ask the questions. The patients, the whether you're getting black patients, whether you're getting Asian patients, whether you're getting white patients from different areas of wherever your patients are from, ask them questions, especially about their culture, because as you were talking about culture, culture trumps everything. It doesn't matter what law is there or what instructions you give. If it goes against their culture, it's not going to happen. So it's as you said again, you need to understand that to come to some sort of agreement within your management plan. So we're all compromising on both sides. But when we say compromising, it's not so much compromising on their care, but compromising on certain aspects of it because they're not going to do it. And if someone's not going to do it, you can't just what do you can't just like dismiss them. Because they're in your care. So you have to now consider what can we do to help them? Is it maybe you show them how to do the dressing so that when they wash their feet, they can reapply the dressings, knowing that you're going to see them again? Is it the footwear? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Just
absolutely. Yeah.
working with your patient. That's what it is, working with your patient.
No, I agree. And I think there is, I mean, in my experience as well in the NHS, a certain type of reluctance from clinicians to often take the advice from the patient themselves and their own
Yeah.
experience. And particularly if there's been a patient who's been coming to the clinic for more than just months, it could be years, then actually, fighting our own prejudices is half the battle, isn't it? And actually,
Yeah.
overriding that with actually being willing to work with the patient holistically is certainly, I think, something that has to be championed. And I think it's inspirational that you're doing that. So it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And also for our listeners today who are from across the world, actually in the US and obviously in the UK, Europe, and Australia, I think it really does bring everybody together, doesn't it? This
Yeah.
the fact that diversity is global. It's in your local communities, it's in families, it's in the clinics, our patients, and actually, what better way to conclude our interview today by really just emphasizing that to anyone who's listening today, to the Foot Health Show. You've been listening to Lyra Sante, who has really eloquently provided a fantastic expose as into the importance of diversity in the profession. And actually, if you want to explore more about this topic, please do tune in. We're here to actually answer questions you may have. And also, if you want to find out more about Lyra and her work, the University of Huddersfield are doing fantastic work to train the podiatrists of tomorrow. So I'd just like to say a huge thank you to you, Lyra. I really, really appreciate the time you've taken to speak to us today, and all the very best.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it as well. Can I just add one thing?
Of course.
I'd just like to say when people think about diversity, they always think about race, but it's not just race. It's about so many different things. And I would say that one of the clinicians that I worked with is one of the best clinicians I've ever come across. And she's from Poland. And she taught me so much in terms of she could tell you everything about so many different cultures, but especially Eastern European, and just the way of life. So if you're just taking Eastern European as a block, then you're not talking about race. So it doesn't just include race. It includes so many different areas, whether it's male, female, where you've come from, because as you know, one part of England is not the same as another part of England. So it's that.
Absolutely.
It all comes down to understanding.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think, building on that point that you've just mentioned is that certainly if you go to somewhere like Hastings or Yeovil in Somerset or Ealing as you've worked in the absolutely or even Huddersfield up north or
Yeah.
there's just such a range of different backgrounds, views, understanding of the world and our feet and the way that we use our feet and occupations are also very diverse as well. I mean, we could go into that, but absolutely, I think, you know, recognizing those differences and appreciating the patient's background is just paramount to providing the best care we possibly can. So I'm fully in agreement with you there, Thalia. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being on the Foot Health Show today.
That's okay. It's been great talking to you, Jonathan. And I think you're doing a great thing here as well.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you're interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations. Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we have been exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, and the decisions that we make and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. That is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world. I look forward to you listening in and tuning in again next time.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep those legs and feet moving, and don't forget to tune in again with your friends next week.